Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Wednesday, April 8th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Clean Sweep, new business offers healthy wellness products by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. After several years of educating people on dangerous ingredients found in care products and the healthier options available, Sophia Duplin recently opened her own business. Dome operates at 37 State Street and serves as a one-stop shop for all of Duplin's recommended wellness products. We sell cleaner alternatives to products that you use every day, she said. Everything from your skin care to your hair care to your cleaning to plastic-free kitchen and pet and baby items, as well as non-alcoholic beverages. Duplin, 28, explained that her business began as a media brand called Detox Your Dome. About 3 years ago, I got really into my skincare, but I wanted to know if the products that I was purchasing were worth the dollars that I was spending on them, she said. From there, Duplin realized how many harmful ingredients were in her skincare products and began looking into other products she was using, such as makeup, hair care, and clothing. I started just posting about what I was learning online on a TikTok page on how to read ingredient labels and how to find cleaner alternatives to products we use every day, she said. Eventually, Duplin began to look for retail space to offer the cleaner products she was finding. She said it all came together in August after noticing a for rent sign near the property while leaving the juicery. So I called the number, and within a week we were ready to move forward, and I just knew that it was the natural next step for this business, Duplin said. And I knew that Newburyport was the only community that I wanted to have a store like this in. After opening in December, she said the reception from the community has been positive. It was a great time of the year to open, just getting to partake in all of the holiday events and holiday shopping, Duplin said. We've been really focused on our community events. So we've had several events in the space. We've brought together local artists, local musicians, and just tried to get people excited about the space and building community. She said, the hope is to have a monthly Dome After Dark community event. Duplin also said Dome will be among the sponsors of Newburyport Pride in June. We are a queer-owned business, and so it's really important to us to be a part of that and to support our community, Duplin said. So we're actually hosting the Newburyport Pride's first book club meeting. So that'll be here on April 21st. So excited to bring the group together in here for a book club. Newburyport Chamber of Commerce and Industry President Nancy Caswell had nothing but praise for Duplin. Since the moment I met her, I found her to be a huge asset to our small business community, Caswell said. She is versatile in what she's offering in the store, welcoming a young entrepreneur, young professional into our community that's investing in the community and probably overcoming a lot of fear of being a business owner is something that the community should really rally behind. She said Duplin's use of media outreach has been impressive to see. She has a whole entire platform, Caswell said. So when I did the ribbon cutting for her, she filled up with at least 100 people within 10 minutes of the opening the door. Duplin spoke about how to detox your dome community has grown, with a new development set to be released soon. We have a podcast, we have a newsletter, and we're launching an app this week, she said. So that should be in the app store very soon. We had over 600 beta users for the app, And so we're making final changes and going to get that out to the app store. The app will include an ingredient scanner, guides to go through each room in a home, and product delivery. To learn more, visit detoxyourdome.com. Asset Builder Award winners announced by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. Multiple educators and parents, as well as a Salisbury business, are among those recently announced as recipients of the City Recreation and Youth Services Annual Asset Builder Awards. The recipients are Bresnahan Elementary School Crossing Guard Mark Cooper, Greater Newburyport Children's Chorus Juniors Director Christina Bauer, Bresnahan Second Grade Teacher Haley Budin, Community Coach and Newburyport Parent Joe Cheever, Moriarty Driving School and Bike Bus Organizer Tom Sore. These are people who are not really just showing up for their job, but are putting in that extra effort and support for our young people. Prevention and Youth Engagement Coordinator Tara Luciano said. The award ceremony will be held April 16th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Newburyport Senior Community Center at 331 High Street. Luciano said the awards recognize people who go above and beyond for local youths. The Asset Builder Awards are really people who are showing up and doing the things because they are passionate about it and because they care, Luciano said. They just have kind of a natural ability to help uplift young people. And I think that is something we don't celebrate often enough in society as a whole. Luciano said winners are selected after community members submit nomination letters, which are then reviewed by Recreation and Youth Services staff. What we're really looking for is people who are going above and beyond the call of duty, Luciano said. Retired police officer Dennis Moriarty, the driver instructor at Moriarty Driving School, said he is thrilled the school was recognized. I think it's nice that people recognize the fact that we do so much, Moriarty said. We do a lot. Being a retired police officer, we stress safety at the driving school more than anything else. So I really teach these kids how to be effective as drivers and safe while they're up there. I don't want them hurting themselves or somebody else. In addition to the Asset Builder Awards, two other honors will be presented that night, the Prevention Champion Award and the Linda May Lucas Award for Excellence. The Prevention Champion Award recognizes an individual or an organization that has supported or implemented prevention efforts against high-risk behaviors in young people. The award will go to Newburyport High School Director of Guidance and Counseling, Lauren G. The Linda May Lucas Award for Excellence honors excellence in parenting advocacy for those with special needs, mental health support, and humor in recognition of Lucas's legacy. Lucas was a psychotherapist at Joppa Counseling Associates in Newburyport and partnered with Recreation and Youth Services to run parenting support groups, classes, and other programs. The award will go to speech-language pathologist Julie Murray. Luciano said she will be excited to see all of the recipients at the ceremony. It is amazing, Luciano said. There's tears every year, happy tears all around. That's part of what makes it so special. She said organizers invite nominees, nominators, and their friends and families. So they'll have a whole table that they can invite all of their friends and all of their family, Luciano said. During the actual ceremony, the folks who wrote those nomination letters will get up and read their nomination letter before the winner is then brought up to receive their citation from Senator Bruce Tarr's office and their award. So it is really special. Library hosts annual Tiny Art Show by Caitlin D., Amesbury. The creativity of community members is on full display this month, thanks to Amesbury Public Library's Tiny Art Show. The show officially began Monday and features numerous tiny clay figures created by Amesbury residents of all ages. As part of the show, the library passed out 180 tiny art kits to patrons filled with clay, a clay tool, and a sponge. Upon giving them out, library staff asked interested participants to bring back their creations and have them be displayed as part of the show. The show is not new to the library, with the event being held in years past, though previously the library provided tiny canvases rather than clay. While the library provided instructions on how to work with clay and suggestions on what the art could look like, the creative direction of the project was left entirely up to the participants. Claire Dombrowski, head of the youth services at the library, said allowing patrons to create with no limits yielded great results. "We love getting them back and seeing what is so unique, seeing what this lump of clay can become, and how people imagined it, and how people use their color and all of that. So it's really fantastic to see how there's like no two alike," she said. Dombrowski also said everyone from expert artists to novices were encouraged to participate in creating the clay sculptures. "It doesn't matter where you are in your art journey. We're not judging it. This is for fun," she said. On Monday, dozens of tiny clay sculptures made to look like everything from dragons to flowers were on display at the library. Dombrowski said she was glad to have seen the art show progress from kits to completion and that many people opted to participate. "I think one of the things that I really like about doing things like this is we send these things off and then being able to actually see them come back to us and see the creativity in our community and being able to provide this informal space to express yourself. It's a great part of being a library," she said. The first day of the show was a success, with a number of patrons taking a look at the art on display, according to Dombrowski. "We have definitely had people stopping by," she said. "The art will remain on display for the rest of the month, allowing visitors to see their own art and marvel at the works of others. This is really a true community art event," Dombrowski said. "As I see it, the Art of the Jail Deal by William Kolba. A new path is being formed in American justice, one that takes the rich quite literally beyond the reach of the law. Their brazen and widespread corruption threatens our economy and our democracy. This is occurring where the Department of Justice and the President are either indifferent to or actively support rich criminals. This trajectory is marked by a growing divide in how the law is applied, with those possessing significant resources often leveraging their wealth to influence legal outcomes, especially by currying favor with the president. High-profile cases have showcased this disparity, where financial power enables a level of privilege that disrupts the principle of equality before the law, undermining public trust in the judicial system. Unless addressed, this trend will erode the foundation of democracy itself, leading to a society where justice is reserved for those who can afford it, rather than for those who deserve it. Take the case of Andrew Wiederhorn, chief executive of the fast food company that owns Johnny Rockets and Fat Burger. According to prosecutors, Wiederhorn stole some $47 million from the business in secret payments disguised as loans. He was never convicted for the secret payments. His case never even went to trial. In late 2024, his company donated $100,000 to President Donald Trump's second inaugural committee. A few months later, the prosecutor on his case was fired by a White House official, and a few months after that, the government dropped the criminal case entirely. Consider Trevor Milton, too, who was convicted of defrauding investors in his electric vehicle company and sentenced to 4 years in prison. After he gave nearly $2 million to Trump-allied political committees, the president pardoned him. This meant that, among other things, Milton would not have to pay the $660 million that prosecutors demanded be returned to his defrauded investors. On Trump's first full day in office, he pardoned Ross Ulbricht, the founder of Silk Road, an online marketplace for illegal goods and services that generated hundreds of millions of dollars in sales, according to the FBI. In 2015, he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for drug trafficking, money laundering, and computer hacking, among other charges. Then Trump posted on Truth Social on January 21st, "I just called the mother of Ross William Ulbricht to let her know that in honor of her and the libertarian movement, which supported me so strongly, it was my pleasure to have just signed a full and unconditional pardon of her son." In the cryptocurrency domain, there's the case of Changpeng Zhao, whose company Bittance served as a conduit for terrorists and child pornographers to transfer money. After Zhao, who pleaded guilty in 2023 to money laundering violations, helped the United Arab Emirates buy $2 billion of the Trump family's cryptocurrency, Trump pardoned Zhao, and the government's lawsuit against Binance was dropped. Trump exercised his executive clemency power on November 28, 2025, to pardon Juan Orlando Hernandez, the former president of Honduras, who was serving a 45-year sentence in a U.S. federal penitentiary for drug trafficking, 400 tons of cocaine, and weapons offenses. Trump issued the pardon after Hernandez sent him a four-page letter casting himself as the victim of political persecution by the Biden-Harris administration and comparing his fate to that of the American president. Mr. Hernandez's letter contained all the ingredients that over time, foreign leaders, lobbyists, and others who interact with Mr. Trump have found effective: flattery, a sense of shared persecution, and an appeal to Mr. Trump's perception of himself as the final arbiter of justice, wrote William K. Rashbaum, Maggie Haberman, Kenneth P. Vogel, and Jonah E. Bromwich in the December 2, 2025 New York Times. Over half of Trump's 88 individual pardons are for white-collar offenses, with money laundering, bank fraud, and wire fraud among the most frequent crimes the president has wiped clean. These cases are part of a broader effort by the Trump administration to largely dismantle the infrastructure for prosecuting rich lawbreakers. It has disbanded or depopulated the FBI and Justice Department teams that pursue corrupt politicians. It has unwound the task forces that investigated the Russian oligarchs and crypto scammers, and it has announced plans to end entirely the Justice Department's tax division, which prosecutes wealthy tax cheats. Trump is apparently profiting from these cases. The Times estimates that he has made more than $1.4 billion since he was elected to second term, in part from supplicants seeking his clemency. A House Judiciary Committee report found that Trump's second term pardons had wiped out more than $1.3 billion in restitution and fines owed to victims and the public. All this self-dealing is a threat to our democracy, wrote Brendan Belau, a former federal prosecutor, in the February 22nd New York Times. Illiberal governments tend to live or die by their ability to sustain corruption. That's because they rely on the support of a network of oligarchs who are tied to the administration's success. It happened in Hungary, in Turkey, in Russia, and increasingly it is happening here, warned Belau. Trump has granted pardons to allies, donors, and culture war figures, as well as felons who, like himself, were convicted of financial wrongdoing. What this corruption reveals to voters is that Trump cares for a small group of rich cronies more than he does for them, while openly desecrating democracy and the rule of law. If you're a donor or a political supporter, you move to the front of the line, said Jim Hux, a lawyer representing a Missouri man seeking a pardon for a tax crimes he committed two decades ago. If you're just an average citizen, you can't even get in the line, Hux added. I told my guy he'd probably be better off if he broke into the Capitol or made a major donation to Trump's inauguration. Dr. William Kolba is an Andover resident, a retired high school and college teacher, and former Peace Corps volunteer in Tonga and El Salvador. He can be reached at bila.kolbe9@gmail.com. Committee discusses baseball field project and bus safety by Caitlin D. Amesbury. The Amesbury High School baseball field project and improving school bus safety were among the topics discussed at the school committee meeting Monday. The meeting began with the committee reappointing Sandy Coppinger to the school committee for Whittier Regional Vocational Technical School. Coppinger received a three-vote majority, with Amy Deacon and David Briley also considered as candidates. Superintendent Elizabeth McAndrews then provided multiple updates, including one involving the baseball field project. The project, which received the green light last spring when the city council voted to approve $500,000 in free cash for improving the field, includes the installation of a backstop and fencing. McAndrew said the project would likely be completed by late May. The projected completion date means the entire high school baseball season would not be played on the field. She described the work needed. I think that's realistic at this point in time, McAndrew said of the completion date. Some of the work that I just listed that needs to be done involves heavier equipment. We can't get the heavy equipment out there, even though there's no snow, but it's too wet and we just can't do that. The field will be closed for an extended period to seed the outfield, meaning that it will be out of play for the summer, McAndrews said. We're going to have to shut it down so that we're ready for field hockey, she said. Bus patrol technology, a system that calls for installing a stop arm on school buses equipped with cameras powered by artificial intelligence to prevent drivers from illegally passing the vehicles, was also discussed by committee members. School district officials are still learning about the technology, which aims to keep students safe and penalize those who violate the law through citations. Joan Laporto, the district's director of business and operations, said during initial discussions that implementing the technology would be cost prohibitive. Bus Patrol has a violator-funded model that allows the company to install technology on buses for no upfront cost if communities meet certain criteria. The company would collect its revenue through a portion of the citation revenue. Amesbury was not previously considered a violator-funded community, but the criteria has since expanded. But the company's ability to have citations issued in Massachusetts is still being developed, Mayor Cassandra Gove said during a meeting. There's still some things in the works on how this actually turns into a citation, Gove said. Bus Patrol and the cameras were introduced in Massachusetts under a pilot program for just data collection. And the transition into actual citations, I don't think has actually been made in any city or town for actually collecting revenue. Any equipment installation would require commitments from the Amesbury Police Department, the school committee, and the Salter Transportation, in addition to adherence to procurement law. Historical performer comes to library, Merrimack. Popular historical performer Cheryl Fay will share the words, wit, and wisdom of Abigail Adams in Liberty and Legacy, Abigail Adams, on Tuesday, April 28th at 6:30 p.m. at Merrimack Public Library, 86 West Main Street. This is a one-hour theatrical presentation, a free event. Refreshments will be served. Register with the link below or sign up at the library. buytickets.at/the Friends of the Merrimack Public Library/2150221. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.